Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moshka Wayne. Two men and one woman are charged this week in the assault September 11th on a gay couple in Center City, Philadelphia. As you've probably heard by now, there was a confrontation near Rittenhouse Square between the couple and a group of about a dozen people. And in the course of the confrontation, some in the group allegedly shouted anti-gay slurs, and both victims ended up at the hospital, one with his jaw wired shut. The suspects cannot be charged with a hate crime because Pennsylvania's law doesn't cover sexual orientation or gender identity. And this hour, we take a look at the law and the call for reform. Joining us in studio is Pennsylvania State Representative Brian Sims. He's the first openly gay state legislator elected to serve in Pennsylvania, and he represents the 182nd District in Philadelphia. Brian Sims, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you for having me.
So it would appear that this was a crime based at least in part on sexual orientation. When you first heard the story, what was your reaction?
I think my reaction, it turns out, was the same reaction that one of the victims had. One of the victims has reported that the last thing he really remembers yelling is that you can't do this in Philadelphia in 2014. And that's what I thought. I suppose my initial reaction was, what am I not hearing? This must be a mistake in facts, and that this can't have been the case. And I don't want to say especially in where it happened, especially in Rittenhouse Square. And I say that because every time somebody says to me, you just don't expect this to happen here, I suppose it implies that you expect it to happen somewhere else. But I like everyone else, I just did not expect it in Philadelphia.
Describe Pennsylvania's hate crime law for us. It's also called the Ethnic Intimidation Statute. So what does it cover?
It covers really, and as we'll hear, I think, later on from both professors, it covers ethnicity, national origin. It does not cover gender. It does include religion. Coincidentally, and I think a lot of people, I've heard opposition as people have voiced their opposition to including sexual orientation and gender identity, among a couple of other things that I think need to be included. People have said, well, it's an ethnic intimidation act. But no, it does, in fact, include religion. So in many ways, as we've talked about how to amend this law, and I do believe that it should also include disabilities, that argument for me falls flat, that it is only intended for nationality, race, ethnicity.
So if this case were to be prosecuted based on a hate crime law, how would that change things, say, at sentencing?
You just said it. It would, in theory, increase the penalties upon sentencing.
There are some, and we'll discuss this a little bit more further later in the hour, but there's some who say that, increasing the sentencing isn't necessarily going to erase hate crimes.
Sure. There are those that would say that. I've thought a lot about this. Probably before this, I suppose I thought about this in a much more academic way. There are 45 states that agree that some form of a hate crime should be on their books, and I suppose that I'm one of those people that does agree. Frankly, we'll talk more about this, but in the age of terrorism, I think my definition of hate crimes and why hate crimes laws are so important has changed as well. And so, there are many people, I have friends of mine that don't believe that hate crimes should be on a bill. In many ways, they feel that all crimes are based on hate, and I understand that. But in a state that does have a hate crimes law as we do, I think that it should include sexual orientation, gender identity, both real and perceived, and that I think it should include people who suffer from mental and physical disabilities.
There was talk early on about trying to bring charges in the Center City case on a federal level. That didn't pan out.
It has not seemed to pan out. And this is one of the areas where I'm not in any way an expert in this. I'm told by those that are that this crime doesn't seem to have rise to a level where the federal statute would apply. But I also know that elected officials in Philadelphia city government, Councilman Jim Kenney, have called for a federal investigation. What I'm told is that doesn't seem likely, and I'm told appropriate, but I'm guessing we're going to hear more about that later.
Have you spoken to the victims?
I have. And I think many people know that the victims have kept their identities secret for a lot of different reasons. But I did. I met with them last week, and I've spoken with them throughout the weekend. I actually spoke to one of the victims' mothers this week as well. And, to their credit, they're very banged up. They are very banged up. All of the reports about the scene of the attack, all of the reports about the extent of their injuries, you see on them when you meet them. But
they do not want to come forward.
They don't want to come forward for lots of different reasons. And you know, we're going to be hearing from them no matter what in the next couple of weeks. I think that as a trial comes together, I think that we're going to be hearing more from them. We have a hearing coming up next week here in Philadelphia for the State Democratic Policy Committee on hate crimes. And they're going to be offering testimony at the hearing. But they are resolute, to their credit. They're both very, I think, very disappointed, very sad. But as one of them said to me, as much as they couldn't believe that this happened in Philadelphia, there's no better city for it to have happened than in Philadelphia. And by that,
that's interesting,
right? That was their sentiment to me. And you know, as they explained, it took this city's collective anger and attention to capture the attackers, and it's that what they hope now just stays as attention and not anger, perhaps is going to be the driving force in changing the law statewide. They recognize that any change isn't going to affect their attackers and isn't going to affect their case directly, but they want to make sure that something comes of this, and there is clearly a gap in our state's hate crimes law that these attackers won't be prosecuted under a hate crime statute.
So not anger.
Not anger. And I'm sure that there's some anger there. There's anger in all of us. I'll admit I have been very angry about this a couple of times. If I sit and stew on it, I think I get even angrier. But I'm sure that there is anger there. What they're making sure is that they are proactive and that they are resolute. And I have a lot of respect for that. Having met with these two gentlemen, I have nothing but good things to say, and just a ton of respect for how they're handling this.
So according to a recent study from the Bureau of Justice Statistics, an estimated 2 in 3 hate crimes go unreported. Why is that, do you think?
There are lots of reasons. I think one of them is shame. I've heard a news report recently from a gentleman in Harrisburg who was the victim of a violent hate crime. And I think what I remember hearing is that at the time of the report, he said that it didn't have anything to do with his sexual orientation, that he now believes wholly otherwise, or knows wholly otherwise. And he maybe knew that then, but he was in, you know, there are many people that are embarrassed to say I was beat up for being gay. And I understand that completely. You know, there are victims of domestic violence every day that don't report that they are victims, because a victim's not something that anybody wants to be. It's not something that anybody takes pride in, and it's a hard thing to take ownership of. Sometimes people are victims in a way that they don't have any choice. All times, I suppose, but in how they respond is what I mean. And these two gentlemen have chosen to respond in a way that I think is very productive, and I respect that.
But if you don't report a hate crime, then it doesn't. Then there's no justice, and the movement doesn't move forward.
Indeed.
So, what would you advise to people who are reluctant to come forward if they're subjected to hate crimes?
Well, the first I would say is I understand why somebody does not. We're a state that doesn't have hate crimes protections for its LGBT communities. And so first and foremost, somebody is thinking, if I come forward and I say this, there's nothing that's even going to happen as a result of it. So I understand that fear. But what I would say is it takes, quite frankly, information to make change. We spent years thinking that we could advocate for better civil rights laws by just bringing data to the table. If we could do the math for equality, we would attain it legislatively. But what we've learned is that it's our stories, quite frankly, that can be the most compelling. And these gentlemen are aware of that. And that's what I would say to those people out there that are the victims of hate crimes every single day that don't feel that they can report it. I would say that their stories, and that those stories that are going untold, perhaps can be the most powerful tool we have in making sure that there are protections in place for them.
So, Brian, I'm going to ask you something kind of personal. You don't have to get into it if you don't want to. But as a person who happens to be gay, have you experienced this yourself?
No. Nope. You know, I am certainly blessed in that regard. I don't draw from personal experience when it comes to my advocacy for hate crimes legislation. I suppose I draw from the experiences around me, but no, I've never been the victim of a hate crime.
Okay. So legislatively, what is happening now in Harrisburg? There are two bills, one in the House, one in the Senate, and where are they?
And to be honest with you, it appears that they're nowhere. And here's what I mean by that. These bills were the quick history of hate crimes legislation, at least in Pennsylvania, that is LGBT inclusive, is that we did have for almost six whole years on the books LGBT inclusiveness and gender included in our hate crimes legislation, which is importantly not anymore. And it was passed in 2002, and at the time, what was done procedurally is, as my understanding is, there was an agricultural bill, a bill most our bills have to be voted on three times. They're voted out of a committee. There was an agricultural bill that had been voted on that was then stripped out, and the hate crimes language was put into the agricultural bill, and it was passed that way. 6 years later, and a lot of litigation later, that case was taken to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, and the bill, the legislation was struck for procedural reasons. In the reporting of late, I want to make sure people understand that the Supreme Court didn't feel that it had nothing to do with whether or not sexual orientation and gender identity and gender should be included in the hate crimes
strictly
laws.
Strictly technical.
And it was bipartisan when it happened at the time. But it hasn't happened since. And hate crimes legislation that is LGBT inclusive has been introduced in the years since. The current session that we're in, which started in January of 2013, had these two pieces of legislation introduced. We have, and I want to be careful how I say this, the legislative leadership in the House would have us believe that there are now, I think, five scheduled days left in session, where we are to be in Harrisburg, where we can be in committee, where we can be voting on legislation. If that's the case, the possibility of pushing through a hate crimes legislation that has gone from essentially zero to zero over the entire legislative cycle is very low. You'd like to think that how could anybody stand in the way of legislation like this, especially after an incident like this? There are just as many people who wouldn't support this as there are people who can now get off the hook and just say simply, there's just not time to support something like this. And I disagree. We are a full-time legislature, and we go till November 30th.
We'll get into that in just a little bit. But I also wanted to quickly before the break, another House bill, 300, would make sexual orientation a protected class. What does that mean?
Every single state and the federal government have certain people that are protected from certain types of discrimination. We tend to know the groups of people. You're protected because of your race, your religion, your gender, nationality, ethnicity, oftentimes your disability. And the protections fall in three categories: housing, employment, and public accommodations. Pennsylvania is now the only state in America where an LGBT couple can be legally married, but fired from their job for being legally married. And that is because we're not included in our state's non-discrimination laws.
Okay, and just to clarify, this is different than the other legislation we were talking
about. It's completely different.
Okay. We're talking about hate crimes and the lack of a statute in Pennsylvania covering sexual orientation. State Representative Brian Sims will be staying with us for the full hour. Joining us after the break, Stacey Sobel, professor at Western State University College of Law. And as always, if you'd like to join the conversation, we welcome your calls, 1-888-477-9499. This is Radio Times, and we will be right back.
The Philadelphia Inquirer supports WHYY and offers the Live Life Love section, a new arts and entertainment section in the Sunday Inquirer, which includes upcoming concerts and events, fashion, coupons, restaurant reviews, and more. Details at inquirer.com/haveyouseenit.
Penn Medicine's Heart and Vascular Center joins you in supporting WHYY. With over 20 community cardiology practices throughout Pennsylvania and New Jersey, Penn's Heart and Vascular Center is committed to delivering advanced treatment options, personalized care, and convenient access close to home. Learn more about Penn's Heart and Vascular Center at pennheart.org or 800-789-PENN. Penn Medicine's Heart and Vascular Center. Your life is worth Penn Medicine.
Hi, I'm filmmaker Ken Burns. You choose WHYY because you appreciate the shows it delivers every day, because it offers something different. WHYY provides trustworthy news coverage, offers a gateway to the arts, and educates viewers and listeners of all ages with support from individuals like you. Visit WHYY.org or call 888-345-9499. And as always, thank you.
Supporting WHYY, the Pennsylvania Farmers Union. Family farmers working together to ensure the survival of a diversified food system by serving as a vital voice for family-scale agriculture. More information at pafarmersunion.org.
This is Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Marty Moskowain. We are looking at Pennsylvania's hate crime law in the wake of an assault on a gay couple in Center City, Philadelphia, a couple weeks back. And we invite you to join the conversation if you have questions, if you have comments. Our number is 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email if you like at radiotimes@whyy.org or a tweet at WHYY. Radio Times. Pennsylvania State Representative Brian Sims is with us in studio for the hour. And joining us now by phone is Stacey Sobel, professor at Western State University College of Law. 12 years ago, she helped to draft an amendment to Pennsylvania state law, which expanded protection based on sexual orientation, gender, gender identity, and disability. That amendment was eventually overturned by the state Supreme Court in 2008. Stacey Sobel, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you.
So before we get to that original amendment, let's go back to 2001. And is it the Michael Auker case?
Well, I think there were a number of cases, and this legislation was actually pending for many years. And I came to Pennsylvania in 2001, and we were able to get a lot of momentum to get this piece of legislation passed. And as you said, it was also inclusive of not only disability, but we also put ancestry in there. And part of it was also a tax related to people who others thought might have been of Middle Eastern descent. And we also added those words actual and perceived, which we felt were very important. So there were a number of changes that were made to the legislation that I think really helped get support. And as Representative Sims said, it's important to note that it was a Republican-controlled House, a Republican-controlled Senate, and it was signed by a Republican governor. And so we were really able to get a wide level of support, and the legislature did the right thing.
So what has changed?
Well, what's changed is a couple of things. Unfortunately, there was a case where someone was arrested in Philadelphia. A hate crimes charge was brought. I actually attempted to have that charge dropped, and the person sued and said that the law was passed unconstitutionally. And as Professor Sims, Representative Sims said, it wasn't because of the language that was in it. It wasn't because of the protections that it offered. It was because of the way the legislature actually passed the legislation. And the legislature took up the it was taken off the books, and the legislature has not passed it again. And so now the protection that was there for a couple of years no longer exists for those groups that were added in. And I think a lot of people were surprised. They didn't realize it. And when the unfortunate attack happened in Philadelphia recently, a lot of people said, oh, it's a hate crime, and then were shocked to find out that that's not true anymore. And so we need to have the laws in Pennsylvania change to reflect that.
So the state Supreme Court removed the protections back in 2008, 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Are you surprised that the legislation hasn't been reworked and signed into law?
I'll say I'm disappointed. not only myself, but a lot of other people worked really hard to get that done. I think the legislature saw that it was a good thing to do, and our country has moved, and Pennsylvania has moved so far since 2002 in relation to LGBT issues. So it really makes absolutely no sense to not have this law.
Well, the conclusion one might draw is that it cannot be part of an agricultural bill the next time around. And
well,
Brian Sims, I see you nodding your head as well.
It was a criminal bill. It was a Title 18 criminal statute bill. And the legislature has done things like this before. I'm not saying that it's good or bad or preferable, but that's just the facts. And they did something they had done before, and this person sued and got it removed. So, yes, going forward, I think it's a good idea not to do it that way. But part of the reason at the time was that there was a lot of difficulty in getting this hate crimes bill through the committee system and onto the floor. And this was an end run around it. I don't think that that should be a problem anymore. I think that now there's enough support within the state and the legislature to get a bill in, get it through committee, and have it approved.
Brian Sims?
I mean, that therein lies the question, right? We've been trying since, certainly since these two pieces of legislation were introduced in January of last year. In many ways, the same obstacles exist now that existed then. They were just able to overcome them with this procedural maneuver. Those obstacles being really the chair of the Judiciary Committees in the House and the Senate, both of whom have voiced, if not expressed, opposition to the idea of including sexual orientation and gender and disability in the hate crimes law. They've certainly voiced opposition to any more movement before the end of this session. But that's the issue. You know, we talk about buoyancy all the time. How buoyant? What is a bill's ability to float to the top? And public pressure is one of those things that pushes bills to the top. I believe that we're about to have a Democratic governor. I think that it'd be a Democratic governor that I know supports including sexual orientation into the hate crimes laws. I don't want to wait. There are 90 days left, 90 some odd days left before the end of the year. And those are 90 days in which I know that especially a rulemaking body can make some rules that we desperately need.
Stacey Sobel, I don't know if you have this figure on hand, but how many states do you know have hate crime statutes on the books, which include sexual orientation and gender identity?
Oh, you're going to ask me this question. I looked this up earlier in the week. I believe there are about 20 states that have both sexual orientation and gender identity on the books. And then there's another group of states that have just sexual orientation.
It's almost another dozen.
Yeah.
So do you see this changing in the near future?
In terms of Pennsylvania adding it?
Well, in terms of across the country.
I think the states that were likely to do it have probably done it. And what's happened on a whole host of LGBT legal issues, certain states are going to move more quickly than others. And then they sort of get to a stalling point. So that's true not only of hate crimes legislation, but also, for example, the anti-discrimination laws that Representative Sims was talking about. So most of the states that have done it did it within a relatively short period of time, and then it kind of stalled. And then it sometimes takes something else to move more states forward, and you sort of have to wait for that. So, for example, in the hate crimes area, there were a group of states that had it with sexual orientation. Some went back and later amended it with gender identity. But after the Matthew Shepard murder, a number of states moved forward again. And so, unfortunately, sometimes after there's sort of a stop in the efforts to do that in states, something has to happen again, and then there's another push again to get it, you know, in more states that don't have that protection.
Governor Corbett of Pennsylvania has condemned the attack that happened in Center City earlier this month. Do you think politically he will feel comfortable enough to sign legislation should it arrive at his desk? And you know, Brian, you had indicated it probably wouldn't happen before the elections, but should he remain in office?
You know, I am the last person that's going to guess about what makes Governor Corbett politically comfortable, but I would tell you that if legislation was actually put on his desk, that meaning that it was passed by the Republican House and the Republican Senate, I think that that would put a tremendous amount of pressure upon him to sign it.
And it's previously signed by a Republican governor, so it's not as if this would be outside of something that a Republican governor has done.
And he has said previously that he supports non-discrimination laws that are LGBT inclusive, as has Republican U.S. Senator Toomey. So it's not that it's a huge departure from what I and I think what Professor Sobel consider to be a Republican ideology in any way.
Interestingly, let's get to the American Civil Liberties Union. It's raised concerns about hate crime legislation. The ACLU is opposed to designating an act as a hate crime unless there's evidence of bias. What do you think of that position, Stacey?
Most hate crimes laws actually require that. You can't just say, oh, I think it was a hate crime because someone was attacked who belongs to one of the covered groups. You have to have something that demonstrates that the person was attacked because they belong to one of those groups. So, for example, words that are said at the time of the attack would be evidence of bias or motivation. And so without that, you can't just sort of, for example, any attack on a person because of their race isn't automatically a hate crime, just like any attack on a person who is, you know, gay or lesbian is not automatically a hate crime. But if their race, sexual orientation, religion, or whatever the group's reason for being attacked is the basis of the attack, that's when the statute is triggered, and you have to have evidence of that. So that's very much in keeping with, you know, hate crimes laws generally.
All right, let's get to the phones. Rick from Hockessin, Delaware, you're live on Radio Times. Welcome, Rick.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the program. My comment is I'm very much in favor of gay and lesbian rights, and completely on board with that. I find that my children, I was raised in the South and saw a lot of things there, and my children are college graduates. They all are extremely accepting. And I just wonder, has society moved so fast on this particular issue? What's the point now of slapping laws on the books that some will find divisive when the society has already moved in miraculous ways that are, to me, super? And so I just wonder, what's the point?
Interesting question, Rick. Thank you so much for the call to Radio Time. Stacey?
Yeah, I'd like to answer that. Part of the Federal Hate Crimes Act includes the fact that law enforcement agencies are supposed to collect data on on information about victims of hate crimes. And sexual orientation and gender identity is reported as the third most common hate crime in this country. So even if we've moved forward in terms of a lot of people's understanding of the LGBT community and treatment of the LGBT community, either legally or culturally, the fact is that the third most reported hate crimes are, in fact, victims, you know, based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. So I think you have to cover it.
Brian Sims?
I would say, two things. First, the reason for laws like this is the reason that we're having this conversation is because of this attack. If the measure can't be the momentum that we have, the measure is the success when we achieve it. There's not a single LGBT civil right in the state of Pennsylvania that is statewide other than marriage equality, which we received in a court case in May. Yes, there's been a lot of gains, both locally, sort of regionally around Pennsylvania at the statewide level and at the federal level. But by no means have those gains added up to success yet, or this kind of attack would not have happened.
Stacey Sobel, go ahead. I'm sorry.
You know, so I can also add, you know, hate crimes still exist. For example, a gentleman was saying he came from the South. I mentioned that LGBT hate crimes are number three. Well, racial hate crimes are number one. Even though we as a country have gone forward, we still have to have, you know, recognize the reality of the situation that just because legal rights are being gained, that automatically violence against those groups are going to go away.
Well, which leads to the next question. Does such legislation act as a deterrent? Stacey, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm not, I think that it might not stop the person in the heat of the moment. They're not going to say, oh, wow, I think this state has hate crimes. Well, I won't do that. But I do think that it sends a larger cultural deterrence about what we as a society, what Pennsylvanians will accept or tolerate as appropriate behaviors, and what we will criminalize. And I think from that aspect, and the fact that we're having this conversation and people are listening to it, is educational, and that helps prevent hate crimes from occurring.
We are looking at Pennsylvania's hate crime law on Radio Times in the wake of an assault on a gay couple in Center City, Philadelphia. If you'd like to join the conversation, the telephone number is 1-888-477-9499. We'd like to know what you think. Send us an email if you like at radiotimes@whyy.org or a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Pennsylvania State Representative Brian Sims is with us, as is Stacey Sobel, professor at Western State University College of Law. So, Stacey, if a person feels he or she is the victim of hate-based bias, what is the first step they should take in a state like Pennsylvania where there is no hate crime law?
Well, I think that, first of all, even if there's no hate crime law, if they're a victim of an assault or some type of other attack, they should come forward because the people, regardless, should be held accountable for their behavior. But it's still also important to give the full facts and let law enforcement know what happened And because they will still track those crimes that, as I said, are required by the federal law. And then we get to have a better picture of what's happening. And so when people say, and, you know, and I heard Representative Sims talking about this earlier, you know, this type of thing shouldn't be happening in Philadelphia. The sad thing is it does. And so when we need to pass legislation, when we need to have these difficult conversations, having that information, having that data to show that, yeah, even in Philadelphia this is happening, it's not just about one of the other sort of counties elsewhere, is really informative and important, because I think, just like our previous caller, a lot of people think, oh, this isn't a problem anymore. And so when people come forward, it helps us demonstrate that it is a problem and it needs some solutions.
You were not surprised that this happened in Philadelphia in the Rittenhouse Square area?
I used to live there, near there. You know, just because you're in Philadelphia doesn't mean that everyone else from the rest of the world, and including Philadelphians with biases, automatically go away. It's disappointing. It's saddening. But part of me is unfortunately not shocked that it would occur.
And Brian Sims, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, I'm nodding my head because I'm reminded of something that Councilman Jim Kenney said in Philadelphia City Council a week ago when addressing this. And he wanted to remind people that these were not Philadelphians that did this to each other. This was somebody who came into this city, frankly, with, as he said, I believe, hatred in your heart. And I don't want those people coming into this city either. But, you know, Professor Sobel hit it right on the head. Sure, this can happen anywhere because people can come from anywhere to do something like this. Maybe my surprise at the beginning was to think that a Philadelphian would do this to another Philadelphian. As I learned the details of it, I was perhaps less surprised.
Is there activity in Philadelphia City Council to address this?
There is. And, you know, it's difficult. We, as Professor Sobel will tell you, trying to enact municipal hate crimes legislation that is LGBT inclusive is a legal quagmire. And it's one that,
really?
that it is. And it's been a very, very difficult thing to do. But I just, this morning, I heard Councilwoman Blondell Reynolds Brown and Councilman Kenney have plans to try to, at the municipal level, try to enact some type of LGBT inclusive hate crimes legislation. I'm curious about how they would go about that, because frankly, Philadelphia has been a very good incubator for LGBT inclusive laws at the municipal level around the state. And if there is a way to do it, and then it'll be duplicatable.
But again, does it seem as if there's a bit of a lag time? It's happening now.
There always is. You know, unfortunately, law and policy very rarely are innovative and forward thinking, especially in our state. But you know, that can't be a reason not to pursue them.
All right, we're approaching a break, and I'd like to thank Stacey Sobel so much for joining us on Radio Times. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, I was happy to be on again.
Stacey Sobel, professor at Western State University College of Law, and State Representative Brian Sims is here for the hour. Joining us after our next break, Ann Pellegrini, director of the Center for the Study of Gender and Sexuality at New York University. And as always, if you'd like to jump into the conversation, here's the telephone number. It's 1-888-477-9499. More in just a moment on Radio Times.
Forever Young supports WHYY. Forever Young, bringing happiness to life, is a health and wellness event featuring positive psychology author Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar, plus leading experts and instructors. Forever Young offers 30 lectures and fitness classes to help you live a healthier, happier life. Forever Young takes place Sunday, November 9th at the Philadelphia Marriott. Doors open at 9 a.m. More information and general admission and luncheon tickets at foreveryounghealth.org.
Get them early, get them often.
If I don't get an education, I'll be stuck like my parents. But I haven't always been able to make school my priority.
The race to intervene with young people before poverty becomes destiny. Next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Widener University supports WHYY and offers over 60 graduate degree programs, including physical therapy, business administration, education, and more. Widener graduate programs are designed to combine challenging and engaging classroom work with experiential learning to help jumpstart your career. Hosting a graduate open house on September 30th from 5 to 7 p.m. Registration available now at widener.edu/grad open house. widener.edu/grad open house. Widener Leadership Works.
I'm Mary Cummings Jordan in for Marty Moskowain today on Radio Times. And in this hour, we're taking a close look at Pennsylvania's hate crime law in the wake of an assault earlier this month on a gay couple near Rittenhouse Square in Philadelphia. Lines are open at 1-888-477-9499. Or you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Our guest this hour is State Representative Brian Sims. And we're going to get to the calls in just a moment. We've got some stacking up, but I'd like to bring into the conversation Ann Pellegrini, professor of social and cultural analysis and performance studies and director of the Center for the Study of Gender and Sexuality at New York University. Welcome, Ann.
Thank you. It's nice to be part of this important conversation.
So you've co-authored an interesting article entitled Hate Crime Laws Don't Prevent Violence Against LGBT People. Where are hate crime laws successful and where do they fall short, in your opinion?
Well, I think we need to make an important distinction between hate crimes reporting acts, and this is something that Professor Sobel was just speaking about. That is a legislation that would mandate collecting statistics on the kinds of bias crimes that are happening, who's being attacked, with what frequency. This, in fact, can help us devise better educational outreach. We can have more focused efforts to prevent violence before it happens, to prevent bias, to change people's attitudes. But I think we need to distinguish between collecting the data, which can then, give us a better picture of what's happening, and a hate crime law with penalty enhancements. Because what we do know is that these penalty enhancements will succeed in one thing, that is sending people to prison for longer. There are no data whatsoever that indicate any deterrent value in the enhanced penalties of a hate crime act and the actual prevention of hate crimes. What we are achieving, however, is increasing our prison population. And the United States is already the world leader in the bodies we have in prison at more than 2.4 million. And I just don't think we want to be number one in that.
Brian Sims, what do you think?
You know, I like to think, a very solid progressive. It's a hard argument to It's a hard thing to argue with in many ways. And I think that the professor and I would probably agree on multiple ways of reducing our prison population. What I would suggest is, and I sort of, in this way, I suppose I agree with Professor Sobel, and that I think that our laws are a reflection of our values. And we state in 45 states in this country that our values say that if you commit a particular crime against a particular person, that isn't just a crime against that person, but it's intended to send a larger message to an affinity that person belongs to, that then could put fear in those other people, then it is more than just a simple crime against that one person. I agree with that. I agree with that ideology. Do I want to be sending people to prison for longer terms? In general, no, I don't. Do I want people punished for the crimes that they commit? I do. And I believe it's more of a crime when you commit an assault against a person because of a particular trait that then is intended to send a message to other people. We spoke earlier about how my definition or how my views on this have changed in an age of terrorism. And if I may, terrorism is an act against a person that is a person or a small group of people that is intended to send a larger message of fear to a group, a larger group. This crime committed against these two people on September 11th wasn't just an assault on them. It was a crime against me as a gay person that lives in this city. I now have a heightened level of fear because of what they did. For me, that therefore requires a heightened criminality.
So, Anne, if I'm reading you correctly, if a person goes into prison and they're in there for a number of years and some extra years are tacked on because they've committed a hate crime, you might end up with an angrier person coming out the other end?
Yes. I mean, this is also, again, I think this is a broader problem with the way we have incarcerate people in this country than just with respect to hate crimes. From what I understand, the three men and women who so far have been charged with this assault in Philadelphia have been charged with both simple assault as well as aggravated assault. The minimum sentence for simple assault, they could end up in jail for a year. For aggravated assault, they could end up in jail for 10 years. So there could already be prison time involved. I guess it's not clear to me that sending them to prison for even longer with an enhancement would actually aid in a project of what? I mean, it's not deterrence. I don't know that, you know, as a queer person myself, I don't know that this makes me feel any less worried about violence. I feel like as worried then about the violence I'm participating in as someone who's increasing prison sentences. I mean, that is, for me, a really important social justice issue. I think of, what about a penalty enhancement that includes mandatory, sort of, you know, having to go to mandatory LGBT history classes, or, you know, a really, like, thinking about education. I just don't think that prison is a place where we sort of educate people back into the kinds of shared values we might wish for in our society.
So, Anne, one more question here before we get to the phones, because they're really stacking up. Why the deeply felt need to have hate crime laws on the books?
Well, I think there is, on one level, just a sense that something many, many people experience. It's vengeance. And, you know, it seems to me that what we need is law to stand in between us and our worst impulses. We need the law actually to protect us from those people who enact the worst impulses against us and do us bodily harm. But we also need the law to stand in and stop us from acting out of vengeance, and to punish beyond what is needed, or to punish in ways that are actually unjust. And so we need some sort of scrim between some of our, I think, as some of the worst impulses we have as human. That's sort of one basic thing. And, you know, I want to go back to something that Representative Sims said. He's been working so hard in Pennsylvania for social justice for LGBT people for a long time. And the painful paradox he referred to, that you can get married in Pennsylvania, but you could be fired from your job, be denied housing, be denied public accommodations. This is irrational. And, you know, that to me, the bill that would increase fairness for LGBT citizens in Pennsylvania is the other bill that Representative Sims has been working on, which would be an anti-discrimination law. And that is one that actually makes more room in public life, rather than sending people off to prison as we can just cabin off discrimination. Hate crimes arise not because an individual is hateful, but because there's a group of people that are seen as less than, and they seem like a ready target, or they seem fearful because they are somehow less than the rest of us. So in fact, the anti-discrimination bill would go much further towards addressing the issue of hate crimes than would a Hate Crime Enhancement Act.
All right, Ann Pellegrini, our callers have been very patient, so let's get to them. Russell in Brewerytown, you're live on Radio Times. Welcome.
Hi there. I'm also a gay man, and I don't believe in hate crime because I just feel it's difficult when you try to legislate the thought or the idea of what someone's thinking about when they commit a crime. That's my main question. I'll take my call up there. Thanks.
Sure. Thanks, Russell, for the call. Brian?
I don't inherently disagree. There are very strong cases to be made against hate crimes in general. But for me, I as an attorney, as someone who is focused on civil rights, as someone who's now a lawmaker, I do believe, in many ways, I think it's a different crime to target somebody because of a group that they are a part of. I know that we talk about elevating a particular crime or aggravating a particular crime, but for me, punching someone in the face is a crime, and it's an assault, and it should be. And frankly, punching somebody in the face is probably based on hate anyway. But punching a Catholic in the face on purpose, because that person is Catholic, to send a message to the people that they go to church with and the members of their community, I think that's a different crime. I think that, to me, is an act of terrorism. It's an act committed against that one person, but it had a larger intent and frankly, a larger impact. And that's why I support these laws. But I am not going to argue with anybody who says that all crimes are based on hate, or that it's unusual to elevate certain crimes because they seem to be a hate which we find more repugnant.
All right, let's bring Louis into the conversation. Louis is from Point Reyes, and you're live on Radio Times. Hello, Louis.
Hi there. Yeah, I just wanted to share how about a year ago, my wife and I moved up from Jacksonville, Florida. And a few months ago, I brought up my adult transgender daughter because I was deathly afraid of something happening to her. I mean, that was one of my huge worries being up here and seeing how Philadelphia is so liberal. I felt more at ease bringing her here. And I think what really threw me off was seeing that there are no laws in place for to protect the LGBT community. I belong to a group called We Are Straight Allies in Jacksonville. That's brought a lot of awareness to the community, and I think that's what's needed, which is a lady was talking about earlier, and I think that's what will help, along with the laws to protect them.
Louis, thanks for the call. Ann Pellegrini, you want to tackle that one?
Well, I just want to say first, I'm really moved by how much Louis is looking after his daughter, you know, that this is also like a first-level response. I mean, to have really important adult allies for our trans youth. And there are organizations out there that are sort of informal networks as well as more formalized. that are working across states that you actually may already know about. But I, you know, I think that this kind of non-legislative response is important in the absence of laws that are actually actively putting in place anti-discrimination for trans youth and LGBT adults. We need parents and adult allies. This would include teachers. This could include clergy to step up and really develop programs in their local communities.
Okay, and let's get to Peter. He's standing by in Winmore, Pennsylvania. Welcome to Radio Times, Peter.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. I'd like to ask the panelists if there's a distinction in the hate crimes legislation between crimes that are motivated by someone's bias or animus against a particular group who's protected by the legislation versus someone who, in the course of a crime, in anger, says things that would be naturally hurtful or spiteful to a specific member of that class or category.
Interesting question. Thank you, Peter. Brian, you want to take that?
I'll give this a shot as a legislator and not as a lawyer. And I think my understanding is, and we heard about this from Professor Sobel before, this comes down to the intent, and that's always a difficult thing to prove here. I think what you're getting at is that if two people are fighting and then one of them throws out a racial slur, one of them throws out some sexist slur, something misogynistic, does that therefore help it rise to the level of being a hate crime versus if the actual intent was to attack someone because they were Catholic? Or to attack someone because they were white. My understanding of the law is that it absolutely does differentiate, and that's why there's this. There's also a heightened level, a heightened standard when you bring a hate crimes law, and that you have to prove that the animus of the crime. And now, Professor, you might understand this better than I do. My understanding is that the initial crime itself, the particular protected class, the animus towards that class, doesn't necessarily have to be the rationale for the initial contact. But if an assault continues, if it escalates because of particular animus towards that class, it would therefore fall under a hate crimes law.
Anne?
You know, I'm actually not sure about this because, I mean, one of the things, this is one of the complications that adding gender to a hate crime statistics act or to a hate crime act, and I'm in favor of including gender as a category of analysis. You know, in the course of sexual assaults on female-bodied persons, it's quite common that the man committing such an assault uses derogatory language that refers both to sexual orientation as well as, you know, known derogatory language with which women are so often assailed in everyday life. And then the question would be, is this does this transform an act into a bias crime against women or a bias crime against lesbians? Is every act of rape against a woman already a bias crime? Because is she being attacked, you know, as a woman? So I'm actually not sure at what moment this aggravating circumstance has to arise, during as the motivation, which is, I think, what the caller, Peter, has asked, or can it be a kind of, I mean, sometimes angry words are said that are just a way to insult the person, which might not even be thought of as being as belonging to that person.
Sure, and this again is where we bring the ACLU into the conversation, which has long objected to some of these statutes because they can potentially punish constitutionally protected free speech, even though it might be ugly. Brian or Anne? I'm sorry, Anne.
Yeah, I'm not in favor of, you know, ugly words and epithets. I'm certainly against gay bashing. But I guess I think we have laws in place that punish people for the acts they commit. These laws need to be enforced in a fair way so that some people don't literally get away with assault or murder, while some others are more likely to be convicted because of the people whom they've assaulted or because of who they, the accused, are. So I'd like to see the laws that we already have about criminal acts enforced more fairly. I'm really nervous about, you know, sort of adding on the enhancement in the ways we are, and with some of the murkiness is around the sort of these particular motivations. I mean, I think I share some of the ACLU's concerns, but I do share, again, this broader worry about even the language of hate crime might misrepresent what it is that motivates someone to target another person on the basis of her race or religion, gender identity. I don't know that hate is adequate to describe what motivated them. I think they may think this person deserves, they are less, they deserve to be punished, mm-hmm. or they might feel fearful of this person because they are different. But I think hate I feel like hate turns it into a kind of psychological issue on the part of the perpetrator,
okay.
And it lets us forget the larger structural problems that set up some people, some bodies, as legally less than the rest. Right now, actually, GLBT people are less than in large parts of this country.
I've got time to read a quick tweet from Jay. We've only got about a minute or so left in the program. Creating a hierarchy of victims does not make LGBTs safer. That's how it boils down to me.
We're not creating it. We're recognizing that it already existed. People ask me all the time, would this have happened? You know, what would we still be having this response if a straight couple had been beat up instead of a gay couple? Well, the truth is a straight couple wouldn't have been beat up. I'm not creating a hierarchy or anything. A hierarchy of crime already exists. What we're doing is we're recognizing it and we're trying to address it head on. If there was a rash of straight beatings in the United States, if straight couples were specifically being attacked because they were straight couples, if that was the animus for their attacks around the country, I'd be the very first person advocating for protections for straight couples on a hate crimes law. These are reflective of what's already occurring.
And Anne, a quick response from you before we close?
I actually agree with the representative that we already have a hierarchy of victims. I mean, which bodies are more likely to be targeted? But I really think we have to put that alongside the distressing fact that in the United States, we also have a hierarchy of those people more likely to go to prison. They're poor, they're disproportionately black and brown. For me, as a queer person, I don't feel any safer by virtue of having these enhancements, and I would rather see concerted efforts to get anti-discrimination bills passed. I think they'll go much further towards enhancing social justice, and I'd love to see coalition work with communities like with the Prison Policy Project.
Okay.
How do we come together?
And I'll have to stop you there. Anne Pellegrini, Professor of Social and Cultural Analysis and Performance Studies at NYU, thank you. And
thank you.
Brian Sims, Pennsylvania State Representative, thanks so much for joining us for the full hour on Radio Times. Appreciate it. Don't forget to check out our Facebook page and podcast, whyy.org/Radio Times. Our engineer today has been Kevin Griffin. Our producers, Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Bilder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. Quinn Lipson is our intern. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in today for Marty Moskowain on Radio Times. Thanks so much for joining us.